Craig. Maggie is Youth Services Librarian at the Carrick branch of Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh. And this year, she is the Ralph Munn Contest Coordinator and also a committee member. You rotate those responsibilities, right?
We do, yeah. There's a committee of teen specialists and librarians from around the city who work together to make the contest happen every year.
I'm so glad we could do this. It seems like you and I just talked yesterday about let's make sure we make this happen and let's do it big this year. And we were able to be at the Labsy Awards and at the Ralph Munn Awards a few weeks ago. Tad covered that and recorded some of the activities and the keynote speech. And we wanted to be sure we featured writers. Tell me a little bit about the history, who Ralph Munn is, why this continues to be held year after year.
Yeah, Ralph Munn was a former director of the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh, who he was actually from 1928 until 1964, director of the library. And he, during his tenure, made a lot of strides in improving on library services for young people. He founded the Young Adult Reading Room that's still at the main library. And upon his death, his estate set up an endowment to provide opportunities for creative writing for teens in Allegheny County. And so this contest has existed in some form since the 1970s and had a short hiatus in the 90s. And we brought it back in the last 10 years or so and have had amazing, huge responses from the high school students around the city and county. So it's really cool that we have that resource and that tradition going on in the city of Pittsburgh.
Are there other cities that have similar contests, or is Pittsburgh kind of unique in that regard?
That we are unique in that the opportunity is something that happens annually and it's very locally focused. I'm sure that there are many public library systems around the country that try to make opportunities like this available, but we've got a really cool dynamic program that involves the publication of an anthology every year. So teens whose work is selected actually get to appear in print, which is amazing as a young writer. And it's just a really good way to give kids an opportunity to grow their skills and discern their interests as they grow up.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I saw the book today and I was excited, and you know, I don't have anything published in it, but you know, it's about an inch thick softbound book, maybe 8 inches by 6 inches or so. I mean, it's a legitimate book that's been published and that's available at all of the library branches, and it's beautifully done. And one thing, you know, we tend to take for granted things in Pittsburgh, I think, sometimes. We think everybody has lots of water because we have lots of water. And I think we think that everybody has lots of libraries because we have an incredible library system. But that's not always the case, depending on what community you're in. So to have not only great librarians, but teen librarians is pretty cool. When did you know you wanted to do that, to specialize in teen services?
Well, I, as soon as I got into libraries and working in libraries, I knew that youth services is what was important to me since I had a really awesome experience in public libraries growing up. So it was kind of a no-brainer. I think that it's really gratifying to work with kids of all ages. And the public library is such an awesome place to do less structured learning opportunities and sort of just let creativity grow and experiment and research. And it's just a really cool environment that we have in Pittsburgh that really opens up those opportunities in the public libraries all across the city.
That's Maggie Craig, who this year coordinated the Ralph Munn Contest. Those responsibilities rotate every year to give lots of librarians the opportunity not just to participate, but to do some of the heavy lifting associated with the joy of getting the publication out. I think what I'd like us to do next is let's meet everybody so that we're all aware of who is in the room, so to speak. And then after we do that, we'll start sharing some writing. And why don't we start over on this end? And I'm just going to ask each of you, if you would, to just please introduce yourself, indicate where you go to school, the community you live in. If you want to say hello or shout out to anybody, feel free to do that. It's amazing. There's people listening that will appreciate that. You never know. But I'm going to start with Benjamin. Hi.
Hi. I'm Benjamin Smith from Fox Chapel Area High School. And just a shout out to my creative writing teacher in 11th grade, Mrs. Green, for introducing me to this contest and kind of really fueling my interest in creative writing.
Hi, I'm Abby Minard. I live in the Mars Area School District, but I go to Shadyside Academy. I want to thank my family for encouraging me in my pursuit of writing. It means a lot, and I just love it, and I would love that they encourage that. Thank you.
And I've got to talk about your shirt. Abby's got Abby's shirt says, "Hyperbole is the best thing ever," which I really liked.
Grammar nerd and a writer nerd, so I just love the wordy jokes.
Thank you for being here today. And next, we have Giancarlo to say hello.
I am Giancarlo Riccobon, and I'm from the Pennsylvania Virtual Charter School. I'm from Swissvale, but I'd like to thank several, writing teachers at the PA Virtual School for, helping, inspire these stories and, get them towards the, this publication.
Good to have you here. And next up.
I'm Jane Juffy, and I live in this Shadyside community, and I go to Pittsburgh Kappa for literary arts. And I'd like to thank my fifth grade English teacher, Mr. Bassett, for helping me establish a love for reading and writing. And I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for him.
Thank you. And next we have...
Hi, I'm Eden Petrie. I live in the Stanton Heights community, and I also go to Pittsburgh Kappa for writing. And I just want to thank my friends and family for kind of encouraging me to grow in the writing community.
Yeah, it takes a lot of encouragement and a lot of discipline to be able to keep writing and wanting to get it right. Finally, with Miriam.
Hi. I'm Miriam Shalavi. And
Hang on, Miriam. It would help if I turned your mic on. Try that again.
Hi, I'm Miriam Shalavi, and I'm really excited to be here. I guess I'd like to thank my family as well, because I suppose without them, I literally would not be here. So.
Good use of the word literally. As writers, I'm sure you all get frustrated at people saying things like, "I literally burned my hand," when you did,
frustrated.
As opposed to, I literally flew out the window. No, you didn't. We had a very exhausting conversation early this morning about whether a period should be followed by one space or two spaces.
One space.
Is everybody a one spacer here? Now, among the older space. People in the room, two spaces?
Two.
See?
What?
See that?
What?
Okay, there's a younger person with two spaces. It generally, if only our country could choose issues like these as our polarizing issues, rather than what we end up choosing to polarize around. But those of us who learn to type, I think it's about 30 we determined. If you're older than 30, you probably think two spaces. If you're younger than 30, it's one space, unless you're that guy out there who had two. Is that somebody's brother?
That's my brother.
Okay. Hey, see, he's a two-spacer. You two can debate this. Stop talking to each other, do all those things. So what we'll do next, I think, is share some writing. Each of the six teens have brought their work that was published, and we'll either hear all or part of it, depending on its form. Before we do that, Maggie, is there anything we should mention in advance of that? We will eventually talk about how you can enter or get your students involved in the 2015 competition. I know you had 400 entries. Who reads these and evaluates them? That must be a daunting task.
It is. We have, like I said, the committee of teen librarians and teen specialists from around the city, and each of the members of the committee reads all of the submissions, and we have an algorithm, sort of, to decide who the finalists are, and then those are forwarded on to the judges for each category. So this year, our categories were short prose, either creative fiction or creative nonfiction, poetry, and screenwriting. So we had local professionals judge each of those categories. This year we had Sharon Flake as our short prose judge. She's a very well-known children's author from Pittsburgh. And then we had Trisha George from Pittsburgh Filmmakers formerly, who was our screenwriting judge. And Dina November, who's a poet in the city, was our judge for poetry. So it's an effort of many people, but the initial reading happens by the teen librarians from Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh.
It's really hard, actually, having done that a few times in the past. I mean, you want to do justice to all of the writers. It's kind of subjective, mm-hmm. and you can look and look and look. And in the end, you had about 400 plus applicants or people submitting writing. And 40?
We published 49 pieces in the anthology. So that includes first and second place winners in each category, in addition to a number of honorable mentions, distinctions in each category as well. So.
Excellent. Well, I don't know if anybody has a preference to go first or last or second or third or fourth or fifth, or we could just sort of go around as we did the first time. Would that work out best, do you think?
Sure.
Why don't we do that? So we'll get started with Benjamin Smith. And Benjamin, you wrote a poem, I think, right?
Yes.
And please, if you feel there's anything you need to tell us about it before you read it, feel free. If you'd prefer that it stand on its own, that's fine too. That's up to you.
I think I'd prefer it just stands on its own. So, Brithalbion. On the shores of Brithalbion, the shores by the sea, the mist curled up the cold gray rocks, the foam sprayed in the breeze, and there upon the grassy fields, in bloody mire deep, lying in the tall green grass, the dead have gone to sleep. The king usurped did on these shores land his warring band, and from the shadows of the night his foe came on the sand. Around them all their foe beset, fire, sword, and spear, and the king, weary, aged, and old, did call for foe to hear. O firstborn, thou whom I hold dear, do not make this strife. Beloved son, my only joy, please spare thy father's life. There was at length only stillness, waves upon the shore. Armies stood there with swords all drawn and shields prepared for war. The foe approached his father's men and raised crimson sword. He slew a man with striking blade and then cried, "Meet thy lord." Upon the field, upon the shore, strife of countless tears, as all who stood there fell to death and slept for endless years. Until at last upon that shore, alone king and foe, each knew how this would come to end, yet great was the king's woe. He took up a spear weighed with doom, knowing time was done. He pierced his greatest joy in life, slew his beloved son. Yet wounded was he in the head, the fate's final strike, the wound too great for time to heal, he and his son alike. With the sun's rise o'er the hills, the king's time was done. With one last breath, he said goodbye and laid beside his son. On the shores of Brithalbion, the shores by the sea, the mist curled up the cold gray rocks, the foam sprayed in the breeze, and there upon the grassy fields in bloody mire deep, lying in the tall green grass, the dead have gone to sleep.
That was not only beautifully written, but beautifully read.
Thank you.
Did anything in particular inspire you to go in that direction?
All my life, I've been a huge Arthurian nerd, like Arthurian legends, everything. And so this is kind of my own rendition of the Battle of Camlann, where King Arthur finals held his final stand against Mordred, his son and nephew.
Well, you sounded great. That was Benjamin Smith, Fox Chapel Area High School. And more writing coming up in just a moment here at the Saturday Light Brigade. We're going to go to our next writer. This is a short prose piece that Abby wrote. And Abby Minard is from Shadyside Academy. Anything that you need to say to set this up in any way?
Sure. I'll be reading an excerpt from this story, so I'll let you guys know how it's been going so far. So the story's called Vanished, and it begins with this man who reaches down to pick his glasses up from the bedside table, and he finds they are gone. And then from the next 2 days, things just start disappearing from his house. He has no idea why. So I'll begin with the third morning. He had no alarm to wake him the next morning. However, his routine was firm enough that it wasn't necessary. Forgetting both pairs of glasses had disappeared, he let his hand travel to the bedside table as it did every morning. It fell and hit the metal bed frame. He shouted with pain, fear, and initially shock, until realizing he wasn't shocked at all. Jerking up to sit, he breathed hard and fast for about 15 seconds. Then he began to laugh. It started as a little chuckle, then a snort as he took in more air, and it exploded. He was not aware of any emotion behind his outburst, only that he couldn't control it. Straight from the gut, his maniacal cackles were loud, long, and forceful. They eventually slowed, and his composure was regained. He rose from the bed as if the past minute had been but a dream, and made his way to the kitchen. Passing his study, he was caught by an emptiness that forced him to stop, a sort of presence born out of absence. He peered in to see what was missing. The whole bookshelf. It once covered a third of the wall. "What next?" he cried, exasperation and fear in his trembling voice. He flipped open his laptop and pulled up the videos from his security cameras. He sped through the video of the study until finding where the bookshelf went missing. He rewound and watched at regular speed. There was no burglar. 1 minute the bookshelf was there, hugging the wall, and the next, completely gone. The same thing that had shot out of him in the bedroom boiled up from inside once again. Fast, staccato breaths fired out his nose, halfway between laughter and sobbing. Each day, more and more vanished from his house. Soon the rooms were almost bare. His sinks, shower, and toilets all continued to function, but at some point his refrigerator, too, went missing. He ordered takeout while contemplating whether or not there was anything he could do. In the middle of that week, he approached the armchair in his living room. "I'd better see you tomorrow. Don't even think of leaving. If you dare..." "Oh, God," he broke off. "Please, please stay. I'm losing my mind, and dear, dear thing, you're all I've got left. Please, please, please." He fell onto it, sobbing. It was gone the next morning. On the eighth day, he awoke standing. Everything around him was blank, an empty whiteness. It seemed to continue for miles. Everything was completely still. He looked at the ground, unable to decide if he was standing on something or floating in midair. "Have I disappeared?" he said in a calm voice. "Or has everything around me?" "Either could be the case," came a whisper. His armchair slowly faded into view until it was standing, or floating, directly in front of him. "What is this place?" It felt strange asking a chair a question, but it felt less so when an answer came to him. The chair, unmoving, spoke to him in his own voice. "A retreat, for those of us who have grown tired of our everyday functions." Have I? If armchairs could smile, this one was. "How do you think you got here?" "I have no idea." Silence. The armchair stared back at him. "How do I go back?" "Why do you want to leave?" it responded. "Is there something wrong with this place?" He thought for a moment. The armchair watched intently. "Are you afraid?" it prompted in his voice. "No. There is nothing frightening about this place. From what I can see, there is nothing evil, dangerous,
nothing even slightly uncomfortable. He paused. That's just it, isn't it? There's nothing here. Nothing good, nothing bad, and without either, what's the point? Somehow he knew the armchair was nodding. This has been a very interesting conversation, he said to the chair. Starting to close his eyes, he let out a little chuckle. Thank you, he added, eyes still closed. Good talk. A whiff of some kind of exotic tea, and he allowed his eyelids to part. He was standing in this kitchen, a mug of bright red tea in his hands. The warmth suddenly surged into his palms and through the rest of him. He took a sip. Freshness seemed to mix in with his blood. With one swift move, he set the mug down on the counter and began his survey of the house. The refrigerator was back. The dishes were back. The clock in the living room was back. The mirror in the bedroom was back. The bookshelf was back. All of the furniture was back. All except the armchair. He stood, puzzled in its usual spot. Did I do this? A few moments passed before he answered himself. Yes. I'm sorry, my friend. Maybe I can't recover you, but I can replace you. We've been needing a change of scenery around here, no?
Abby Minard. That's beautifully written and conceived. It's difficult for me to ask you to just pinpoint inspiration for that, or maybe not. It's easy for me to ask. I don't know if it's easy to answer.
I mean, all of my short stories and poems usually begin with some strange image or idea that pops in my head, and I don't usually know where they come from. But I've been doing a lot of thinking about furniture recently, and I just had this idea of what if someone's house just starts losing items, and what would that mean? What is the important thing in this house? Or is it important what you do, or is it important what's just sitting there?
That's a greatly conceived, a great story. By the way, if you would like to share comments at all with us, the best way to do it is you can send us a text at 412-200-5975, 412-200-5975. Let our authors know what you think of their work. Let them know you're listening. Give them a shout back, if you will, 412-200-5975. Giancarlo is next, and I think we'll move this microphone over to you, if that's maybe. I think we'll use the green one. The green one's best, probably. And Giancarlo, his piece is also short prose, and it looks like you received honorable mention for two different pieces. Which are you going to share?
I'm going to share the story titled Stockholm.
Okay, and we're going to adjust your mic just a little bit beforehand. Thanks, Gia. And the title here, Stockholm, from Giancarlo Riccoboni?
Yes.
Okay. Let me do that a little better, from Giancarlo Riccoboni.
All right. So I'm going to pick up after the first page and sort of fill you in on what's happened so far. The story's oblivious protagonist, a young boy named Sebastian, is sneaking out of his steel-reinforced room in the middle of the night to get a drink of water. He rolled up the sleeves of his favorite pajamas, an orange jumper with an unintelligible string of numbers on the breast pocket. Then he held his cup under the water spout and twisted the knob. When the tumbler was full, he moved it underneath the other panel and held down the dispensing arm as a generous helping of ice plopped into his cup. There we go, thought Sebastian. The boy began to make his way back to his room, but, passing the door opposite his bedroom, paused once more. Distant chatter and heated voices penetrated the door, which was also made of solid metal. For as long as Sebastian could remember, he'd never been through the door, hadn't even had a glimpse at what was on the other side. His parents and sister came to him through this portal, never the other way around. He was fine with that. He trusted his master's judgment that he simply wasn't ready yet. Nonetheless, he was a bit curious. It couldn't hurt. Sebastian put his ear to the door, clutching his glass to his chest. The vibrations from the other side carried through. Unmistakably, the rising voices belonged to his family. "How long do we have to keep this up?" his mother fretted. He could identify the owner of that voice, and could almost picture his mom's frizzy hair and frazzled expression. "Granted, it's hard," admitted an authoritative baritone, Sebastian's dad, "but the ends will justify the means." "And what means are we investing everything in?" Mom said. "Is he really worth the ransom at this point?" "Ransom?" Sebastian scrunched his brow. He didn't recognize that word. After pondering in suspicion for a moment, he decided to chalk it up as one of those words for grown-up problems. His dad responded with certainty. "Trust me, he'll pay off." It was Sebastian they were talking about. He knew it. And they seemed awfully worried. Parents usually did that, right? As the baby of the family, he found that his parents frequently fussed over him and privately discussed him. Sebastian just wasn't sure whether to be flattered or concerned at being the center of the grown-up's attention. Then he heard the voice of his sister, Jennifer. Being 17, she was practically an adult anyway. Sebastian wasn't surprised that she was involved in this little talk. In a way, Jennifer was a symbol of all the things he wasn't allowed to do. Someday, his parents assured him, he would be mature enough to set foot outside the house like Jennifer could. I don't know if I can keep up this act," she whimpered. "You most certainly will," Dad replied. "You don't have much of a choice," Mom interrupted. "That's what I'm trying to say. Our options are narrowing by the minute. Without the ransom, our funds are running low, along with the few remaining safe spots. And we're having increasingly closer shaves. We can't back out of it. He's already seen our faces." "Of course I've seen your faces," Sebastian thought. "You're my family." "Remain calm and lower your voice," ordered Dad. For a moment, all Sebastian could hear was his mother's ragged breathing. "I've worked on a new negotiation," he continued. "We're close this time." "We'd better be. I feel we're in too deep." "Face it," sighed Jennifer. "Things are way out of hand." Brow wrinkled curiously, Sebastian leaned in closer. As his body shifted, so did the cup in his hands. Ice-cold water sloshed over the rim, splattering onto his pajamas. Shocked by the cold, the boy dropped the glass. It all shattered at his feet. His family had burst through the metal door in a blink. He made no move to flee the scene of the crime, instead standing there, petrified, while water soaked his socks. He gawked up at his disappointed family, wondering what he did wrong.
That was Giancarlo Riccoboni. That was really fun. Any words about the inspiration? It's just really neat to kind of follow along. It was very engaging.
Yeah, I guess you do have to pay attention to, I guess, catch all the nuances of the dramatic irony. But the inspiration, you know, I was thinking I would put a new twist on Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah.
Where, you know, someone falls in love with their kidnappers. And, you know, I figured why not turn it into a family? He thinks it's a family.
Do you like to act at all by any chance? Because you read that extremely well. I thought you were really expressive as you read it.
Well, I guess I have a lot of practice of reading on bikes at my virtual school. I might be good at, like, voiceover acting.
Yeah. Well, you sounded great. Thank you for sharing that with us. Abby, who are Jody and Todd? Do you know who they are?
Yeah, they're my aunt and uncle.
Well, they're listening, and they write, "Excellent job. David Byrne would be proud of you." I know who David Byrne is, do you like David Byrne?
Very much so. I'm a huge fan of his, and once I started really listening to his music, that's kind of when I started writing about inanimate objects.
Ah, well, Jody and Todd, say hello. Where are they? I think they're from Pittsburgh, from what I can tell by their area code, are they?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. Now we are going to go to Jane, who has some poetry to share with us. Jane is from Pittsburgh Creative and Performing Arts High School, Pittsburgh Kappa. And Jane, any need to set this up or simply, well, I'll turn it over to you however you'd like.
This poem was an assignment from my poetry class, and it was a song of myself by, like, Walt Whitman, and it was kind of autobiographical, so that was mostly what I worked on, so... this is called Leather and Inkblots, Song of Myself. I celebrate myself, and for good reason. I am the way that books crinkle in the rain and how photographs wrinkle over time. Who is to say who I am supposed to be? One out of billions of people, and I'm supposed to be unique. Who decided that? I am the way electricity cracks through the core of the breaking and uproarious earth. I open my eyes to see nothing but moving shadows that leak below my door. Thoughts race through my mind, changing its subject at every moment it gets, like when teenage girls go clothing shopping and don't know what they want. I will be the one to oil the gears, making sure they click, click, and click over and over again. Ivory and whalebone tighten to disfigure my organs before I'm even of age. Breathing is no longer an option if you want to fit. Lines of leather-bound novels stare with their spines toward me. Look at how beautiful they are, with scrutinized designs and colorful borders. Sound barriers are broken, and sparks electrify the air. I breathe in the crisp, clean paper and gaze at the ink blots. This is who I am. I celebrate myself. Thank you.
That was very well written. Thank you.
Thank you.
For sharing that. Who's your language arts or writing teacher at Kappa?
The poetry teacher I had was Mr. Harris. He doesn't work there anymore, but he really influenced me because Walt Whitman is one of my favorite poets. So this just kind of delved my, you know, creative input from poetry, and I felt like so excited to write such a song of myself and an autobiographical poem.
Yeah, it was well done. And Jane, is it Juffy?
Juffy.
Juffy.
Yes.
Jane Juffy. I want to be sure everybody remembers your name so I can say you were here when you all go on to whatever you're going on to, which could be fame, fortune, or both. If you would like to text us with a comment, 412-200-5975. 412-200-5975. You're listening to the Saturday Light Brigade. If you're just joining us, we have a special youth expression showcase today with Ralph Munn Creative Writing Contest honorees, the contest sponsored by Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh. And we'll tell you about next year's contest in just a little bit. But now we're going to go to Eden, who also has some poetry, and Eden is a classmate of Jane's, Eden Petrie. Are you in the same class, same year?
Yeah. Yes.
And what are you going to share?
I'm going to share my poem called The Summer of Lemons. And, okay. We sat on hot pavement, hot enough, I thought, to fry an egg. Though you proved me wrong, and in the end I owed you $5, but at least we were spending time together. Oliver pushed Stella around in little plastic cars, and Mom read her books under trees that shaded her like sketchbooks. You called us the first generation, because we were the first wave, and after us the flood began. Maybe that's why we were spending our summers on the West Coast, peeling fruit like adhesive bandages. There was a lemon tree in our yard, and lemonade ran through our bodies like blood. Mom took pictures of us standing in front of it, a peace offering, I suppose. We stood together, and I don't remember what I said to you, but it hit you hard. You picked a lemon from above us and squeezed the juice over me, your fingers like talons. It dripped onto my head, and you and Mom laughed. The war of lemons was short, as short as the length you wanted my hair, you and Mom in the kitchen trying to convince me. I suppose I'm just stubborn, but you are too. Maybe that's why you cried when you tried to bake me cookies. But in that moment, I stood under the tree, watching you laugh, I felt like we were actually siblings, the good kind. Lemon juice dripped off of my hair and down my fingers, and once sun-glazed, my palms like dried glue and egg whites.
That, it's hard not to just gush over all the work that we're hearing this morning. And inspiration for you as you wrote that?
My brother, definitely.
And what's his name?
His name is Donovan. He also entered into this contest, so.
Well, that's great. Where does he go to school?
He went to Kappa also, and he was also a writer, but now he's at Point Park.
Excellent. We're going to come back in a bit because I'm curious about all of your aspirations. But we have one more writer who we're going to feature right now, and that's Miriam Shalaby. And she has short prose to share with us. And Miriam, we'll turn it right over to you.
The piece is called The Skirt.
Okay, hang on 1 second. Okay.
Is this better?
It's me again. It's my own mental block on hitting the right button here. It's not you. What's the piece called again?
It's called The Skirt. A sheath of pale denim catches her eye. She unhooks it from its retirement between the ugly feathered sweater and that drab gray t-shirt she never wears, and lays it gently against the black quilt on her bed. The girl gulps, almost afraid to look. But she does, and is surprised. It doesn't look angry or incriminating or mournful. It doesn't call to her, "Mary, Mary, come back." On the contrary, the skirt looks so apathetic that for a split second, the girl is convinced it hasn't been shoved away for the past 3 years. "Hmm," she thinks, biting her lip. Shroom. She tugs a cord, and the blinds blink shut. Flick. With a switch, the single hanging lamp shines on her like an interrogation bulb. Tossing her leggings to the wall, she steps into the skirt and lifts it to her waist. Zip. Click. The skirt embraces her like an old friend, its soft cotton tickling her ankles. Mary sets her hands on her hips. The sultry, cherry-red lacquer on her fingernails clashes fiercely with the innocuous blue of the skirt. Her eyes slowly lift to meet her reflection in the mirror, and a wave of memories come crashing down, sending a shiver down her spine. She can feel the old Mary touching her with flashes of the past, walking out into the heat of the summer sun, the skirt swishing against her legs, choosing to wear the skirt every day it was clean, oblivious or indifferent, not that it mattered, to the oddity she swung on her hips. Cheerfully answering, "I don't mind the heat," to her skeptical, shorts-clad friends. But although she loved her skirt, others didn't seem to. Everywhere she went, people stared. They ogled and gawked and scoffed and pointed. In the sea of bare legs, the mere extra foot of cloth stuck out like a sore thumb. Despite this, she wore it. She wore it proudly, with wide-brimmed hats and clogs and beaded dangling earrings that glinted in the sun. Mary wonders where those earrings are now. It was summertime, a hot and humid Virginia July, sticky but sweet, like a carnival candy apple. Mary was 13, sitting on the swing at the neighborhood park. She was really too old for playgrounds, but she liked them anyway. When empty, they were great for daydreaming. She kicked at the wood chips beneath her feet, tracing a swirl of dirt in the ground below as she swung lightly, back and forth. She imagined a tribe of goblins who were trapped under the earth, waiting to be released. "Don't you feel hot in that getup?" Mary looked up. "Hi, Avery," she smiled, still dragging her feet through the mulch. "Nope, not hot." Avery licked her bright blue popsicle. "Hmm," she said, furrowing her brow. "Why do you wear it? No offense." "The skirt?" "Yeah, the skirt." "Well, I like it." Mary looked straight at Avery and said frankly, "It's me." To Mary's surprise, Avery began to giggle. Avery's eyes crinkled and her mouth flew wide open, exposing her electric blue stained tongue. Her popsicle wobbled in her hand, dripping blue slush onto the ground. Splat, splat. Mary waited patiently for what seemed like a torrent of laughter to subside, pursing her lips. She tried to imagine the goblins again, but found it difficult to concentrate with Avery cackling in front of her. Finally, Avery gasped, "You're not a skirt!" There was a pause. "Of course I'm not a skirt," Mary said, exasperated. "Then why did you say, 'It's me'?" Avery said, pointing at Mary's face. "Because it is." "Well, Mary," said Avery, matter-of-factly, "you're a girl, not a skirt." And there's more, and I hope you get the chance to read it. But that is the climax right there.
That's Maryam Shalaby. Thank you. Thanks to all of you for sharing your work and for having the courage to actually write, which I think takes a lot of courage. Let's go around real quickly. If there's something you meant to say that you wanted to say, this is the perfect time to do it. But also, I'm just curious what your plans might be after graduating. And we'll start with you, Benjamin.
Eventual plans is I hope to have a book written sometime before I die. But that's really my plans, just get a book written sometime before, you know, my time's up.
Yeah, I'd like to write a book before you die, too. we'll talk about that later. Abby?
I'm with you on that. I would love to have a book published before I'm dead. A couple, hopefully. But I think I would definitely love to teach writing. Either in high school, middle school, maybe as a professor if I'm lucky. But I think I've been really inspired by teachers in the past, and I would love to share what I've learned from them and the beauty of writing with younger people, and so they can grow up and hopefully share that with other people too.
And let's next hear from John. Carla?
Well, as part of my bucket list, Benjamin was saying, I obviously want to publish a book, several books, some of them co-authored with my brother, and you know, I'm also interested in being an editor, help other writers write the great novels.
Editing's tough. That's great. And now, let's see, we've got Jane next.
Giancarlo on this one. I want to be an editor. or like, you know, something having to do with publishing and editing, because I'd love to give people books that influenced me when I was younger and now even. So, yeah.
Eden, how about you?
I mean, I guess I'm definitely with everybody else on the, like, I want to publish something. Thing. Yeah. But I'm also really into film and screenwriting as well, so hopefully that can happen.
And finally, we have Maryam.
I actually want to go into science. I want to point out to everyone who's listening, if you're a kid or even if you're not, that writing can be something that you have a lot of fun doing as a hobby or as a means of self-expression. And you don't have to take it as a career. You can be anything else and still have writing available to you. And that's what I plan to do as I grow older.
That's really well stated. And frankly, any career you choose or anything you do in life, you need to be able to write well. And in fact, writing well, I think, is the key to being able to express yourself well verbally and probably even non-verbally. So you all have great things coming up. And I really am happy that you're here, and I'm also thankful for the support of your parents and family members that have come down. Now let me return to Maggie. How can people read the whole anthology, and what should folks do to get involved for the next version of the Ralph Munn Awards?
The 2014 anthology will be available in all Allegheny County public libraries this fall, so check with your local library to get a copy of the anthology that features all of these writers' work along with many others. And as for the 2015 contest, we don't have official dates yet, but you can stay tuned in winter of 2015, maybe January, February, for more information. The deadline to the contest is usually in the spring, April or May, and then we have our winners selected over the summer.
Congratulations to all of you, and I hope you'll keep in touch. Come back again and share more writing. And thanks for being here today.